Support for reporting on technology and innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com. Welcome to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and we are broadcasting from the studios at the University of Sioux Falls, and we're going to talk about robot technology and innovation in the classroom coming up. But first, we're going to start and talk about some exciting new businesses in Sioux Falls. And Thad Geed is here. Did I say that right, Geed?
You got it. Yep.
Or okay.
Thaddeus, yep.
A client specialist with Zeal Center for Entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And Thad, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
So exciting things happening at Zeal?
So many exciting things. We got two of them along with us here in the studio too, but we're that facility over on the Southeast Tech Campus area of Northwest Sioux Falls, and we serve as an entrepreneurial kind of hub and facility for startup businesses, entrepreneurs looking for incubation or network programming and support.
Incubation, a place to just kind of start things out, right?
Yes. You're in early stage or pre-launch or just in the launch stages. So there's an application to become a resident of Zeal. So we have that level of membership. It's the Tenant Incubation, which Think3D was and now graduated out of, and Innovate currently is. It's here with us. But yeah, you start off in your business and you use the facility as your home that you're setting up shop and launching your product or your service or your online commerce.
Okay. And how is the level of collaboration? Is it happening the way you had hoped?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we are now more opportune to housing some terrific events and allow more collisions for entrepreneurs or business people, entrepreneurs, city organizers, leaders, banking. So it's all where these things are kind of coming together. And the recent remodel allowed for that. Rather being a little more closed off, it's now an open space. So it's a kind of rework of a kitchen. It's now open floor model style.
Okay, let's talk about the collision. And if you guys want to jump in before we talk about your businesses, talk about the collision and what that really means and looks like as you're an entrepreneur.
So what's interesting is when you're building, a lot of times you can get your head down and get into the work that you're doing. But when you're able to come up, whether it be to grab a beverage or popcorn or whatever it is, you see other people who are working on their things. And a lot of times they intersect. So, for example, my business, Think3D, we published a book with Throne Publishing, who is also housed out at Zeal Center for Entrepreneurship. And so those type of relationships where you can just be going to get a cup of coffee and next thing you know, you're writing a book, you know, and so you have an opportunity to kind of intersect and bump into each other and create those collaborations.
Okay. Does that work in the science field, Rob?
Well, in a sense, again, when you're up getting coffee, you might run into somebody that has a HR business, for instance, that as we grow could help us with whatever HR needs that we have. Yesterday, there was a on-site accounting firm. So if you had some accounting questions, I think they're open to helping you get started on the accounting side of your business. If you're doing video conferencing, there's another company down the hallway that can help you out with taking a Skype to the next level. I can say that every time we try to do a Skype, something is wrong with a microphone or a video camera. And so they're offering solutions in that regard. We have, two or three of the labs in the basement, and there are a couple of openings. So we'd love to encourage some other people to come out and enjoy the labs out at Zeal. There's a growing focus on biotech that I feel is going on and medical related technologies. So I don't think those labs will be empty too long.
And how, Thaddeus, how do you recruit? What's your way to go about recruiting businesses to?
Well, I'd say most of them find us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we are trying to be more and more community present, so outside of our building and walls. And we've been doing that recently. We've had Sioux Falls Startup Weekend hosted at our facility with help of John Meyer, Andy Jorgensen, a few other organizers of that, along with Techstars. So along with hosting other events too, which kind of brings people in and raises awareness. Because yeah, we still do get people like, oh, I've never heard of this. entity or this organization that you guys have this service. And yeah, it's rather terrific once they do find out about it. But yeah, we have a lot of people reach out via our website saying, all right, I'm ready to take the leap, or I'm developing this product, or can you help formulate this with me? And we just kind of sit shotgun, help to ride along with them and help however we may.
Okay, well, let's start in and focus a little bit on your businesses. Anybody want to go first? Okay, Think3D.
Yes. So Think3D Solutions, we are a consulting firm, and so we specialize in leadership development training as well as organizational culture. So we go into businesses and organizations and help them pull their culture into the 21st century so they can retain and attract the best talent and just improve the overall production and quality of life.
Okay, and how? What's the secret?
To be happy. which is an atypical answer. I think typically when people think of products and services that they would invest in their business, they think about traditional deliverables, things that are easy to quantify. And that's always a byproduct of what we do, which is greater production, greater retention, greater recruitment. But the real reality is the genesis of all of that is people feeling better in their spaces, cooperating, communicating better, and feeling better about their lives in general. And so when you have a more cohesive culture, a healthy and productive culture, that's more likely to take place.
All right. So you have come from the business world.
Yes.
Yes.
So I was in finance and sales and things of that nature for some years. So we were with my partner and I were with several Fortune 500 companies for years working in finance and things of that nature. And that's where we kind of saw the expense to not addressing your culture. Whether or not it's intentional or not, if you're not focused on the culture, and as we said, a culture will emerge whether intended or not, but if it's not one that you invest in, it'll be one that you pay for. So in a lot of businesses, it just happens. And that's never healthy, usually. And so what we do is we just try to put some intention into it. And we learn that being in these different spaces, that if you put a constant focus and an intention on a culture you create, it's one of your design and is more likely to help you reach the goals you want to reach.
Okay, so paint me a picture. What is a culture that's a problem?
Well, the number one thing that people have frustrations with is poor communication. That's probably one of the biggest things. So that's not only how you communicate, but what you communicate. And a lot of times right now where people are up on business jargon and things of that nature, they may be saying the right things, but it's not what you say, it's what you communicate. So it means how are you treating your customers? How are you treating your internal customers? The greatest example of how you want your customers to be treated is how you treat your employees. And sometimes that doesn't happen. Silos. A lot of people have situations where information is being contained in one department or one space and not being shared. And we see that even more now generationally, where people who have been in the business for 30 years are not transferring that information to the younger workforce. And those things are not contained in handbooks or anything like that. And that creates a lot of dysfunction. And it makes the turnover even that much more painful because that transfer of knowledge never took place. So those are two of the probably biggest things that are affecting businesses today. But it can go into everything, as even now, which is the popular topic that we're seeing with sexual harassment and things of that nature, are all indicative of having cultures that haven't been tended to.
And is your message for the senior managers, middle managers,
all
employees?
Of the above. Everybody's in a boat. Tactically, middle management, right, is probably the greatest gain because that's where you have the biggest ratio, 1 to 12, 1 to 15. I always find it interesting when someone says, yeah, I have 300 people that report to me. 300 people don't report to you. You know what I mean? 5 to 10 people report to you. But all of those individuals that are in middle management have 12 people. That's a huge ratio. So if that one person isn't happy, if that one person isn't engaged, that will play out with those people that report to them. So it's important, though, that everybody knows that everybody's in the boat. We're not there to be a voice box for senior leadership. They have to be held accountable the same way as the person who changes the trash liners has to be held accountable, because nobody's more important. You may get paid more, you may have more responsibility, you may have more privileges, but no one can be more important in an organization, because as soon as that happens, you create a hierarchy of importance, which means the people that are at the end of that hierarchy don't see value in their jobs, So when they stay out that day or they don't come in or they give a half-hearted effort, they don't really see a problem in that because you've communicated to them that their job is not terribly important.
How do you change that culture?
Well, the first thing you do is you get in and you understand, help people understand the power of culture and that it doesn't necessarily have to do with just how much you get paid. But when people start to realize that the average person who starts their working career at the age of 18 works to the national retirement age of 67 and lives to the national life expectancy of 78 is going to spend 40 of their 60 adult years working. That's 80% of your adult life working. And then when you couple that with the idea that people are going to spend anywhere from 50 to 75% of their waking hours working, can you say that you don't like your job and that you love your life? You spend too much in it. You spend too much time in it. You spend too much energy in it. And so when you're coming home and you're giving your family and you're giving yourself less than they deserve because you've left everything at the building, that's going to be a problem for you mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. And so once you get people realizing that, what's at stake, what's at risk, they're open to the idea of changing culture. And then we just start working on the things that are possible if they give forth the effort. And then we start chipping away at one step at a time.
I hope my husband isn't listening to this right now.
But it's true for everybody, right?
It is, yeah.
It's true for everybody.
Right, right. So, but the question is it can, how do you get total buy-in from everybody who may or may not need to change?
Well, one of the points is that usually when people get to us, it's become abundantly clear that it's necessary.
That it's a problem.
That's number one. But number two, once you have that breakthrough and what we call the principle of exposure, which is that what you are exposed to likely influences what you become, right? And once people have a greater exposure of what's available to them, they reach for more. Most people live with a lid, right? They say, I'm going to work for this 40 hours. I'm going to make X amount of dollars. I'm going to work here for X amount of time, and that's my life. And as soon as you get people to think a little bit differently, to think bigger, and they accept that they could be happy, they accept that it could function better, and that their work can actually feed their lives instead of just feeding their families, it becomes different, and then people are willing to do it. And then we talk about communication. Then we talk about conflict management. Then we talk about coaching. And by developing leaders, right, because most people get their job because they were the best at the thing, right? You're the best salesperson, so now you're the manager of sales. And there's no worse way to reward somebody than to take them from something they do really well to something that they don't. And most people don't train that person to become a leader to lead people. That's a huge component of what we do. We do leadership development training so that when a person gets that position of leadership, they are prepared for it, they understand it. And if you have good leaders, if you have people who have the expectation that they should be happy, and you have quality communication, you're going to have a worthwhile culture. And then it feeds itself. Now everyone that you bring into the organization is coming into a healthy culture, so they know what they're getting into. And then you can start to hire for belief and then train for skill.
And how do you create that buy-in for belief?
Well, again, we usually have people create it themselves. It's hard not to buy into something that you participate
in. It's got to come from bubble up,
correct,
not top down.
And even in the ideal sense, it's circular, right? So it's not necessarily a top or a bottom, right? We are all in it. And that's really what a culture is, right? If you poison a river, it doesn't just hurt the river, right? It hurts the trees. It hurts the wildlife. It hurts everything. And so we want to take that poison out of it. And so we want people to participate in it. And so when they talk about a belief statement, that's going to be different than a mission statement or a vision statement. It's going to talk about what you're willing to wait for, what you'll take less for, what you'll pay more for. What do you want on your company's tombstone? What is your North Star? And once you have that, we all can point to the same thing. So, for instance, our belief statement is that we believe that we could better the world by improving the way people live through improving the way people work. And so changing the world is a really big task. But if we start by improving the way people live, by improving the way people work, we can change the world one step at a time. And so when you make it more bite-sized and you make it something that's realistic, even though it's a lofty goal, then everyone can participate. Like I said, if you change the trash liner, you can come in with a positive attitude. You can say something kind or polite to someone. You can be open to feedback. You can do those things at that level, and that obviously is going to encourage people. We define leadership the same way John C. Maxwell does, which is leadership is influence. Everyone who has influence can and should be a leader. And so once you do that, now you have buy-in because it's not somebody telling it to me. It's something that I get to live and breathe.
We're not seeing people in 40-year careers at the same place anymore. Like,
right.
like my parents, right? Mm-hmm. That's changing. So people are looking for something bigger and better?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, why should you? I mean, let's think about this for a second. What people don't really think about sometimes is that the average marriage in the United States lasts 8 years. The average person in the United States is going to work for at least one company for at least 10 years. So the idea that I will go work in a business for 20, 30, 40 years and not have the same expectation of love, grace, understanding, communication, appreciation, the same things that I would expect from any long-term relationship, whether it be a spouse, a child, or a friendship relationship, is absurd. And so if I don't see those things exampled, how much time should I give you of being unhappy and being less than content or not fulfilled before I look somewhere else? And the idea that I should just stick it out in the hopes that one day you will value me or appreciate me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And young people understand that, not because they're lazy or not because anything else, because they saw the effects of work in their parents. They saw parents that came home too tired to play catch or help with homework. They saw parents come home and not talk to each other in terms of their spouses. They saw parents who told them to be happy, change the world if you can, go see it, live your life, money isn't everything. And they're doing those things. It's just that they're doing it on our dime, and sometimes we can get frustrated by that, right? And so a lot of the things that young people are doing are things that people wish they would have done. But at that time, it was different. You were in the phase where you might be lucky to have a job. And now that's not the case. You're the business of you. You're entering into a business relationship with that company. You have accounts receivable. You have expenses. You have shareholders. You have budgets. And you are your own business. And so you can choose to move as you want to. People should have to earn your loyalty.
All right. We need to take a quick radio break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation and we'll talk about more innovation happening here in Sioux Falls. You're listening to Innovation. Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and we're talking about Zeal and some of the businesses that are there. And Rob Nelson, you're up next.
Thanks for having us, Kara.
You're the Chief Operating Officer of Nanovate?
That's correct.
Nanovate. Okay. And it is the next generation of a protein analyzer, right?
That's correct. We're a diagnostic instrument company, medical diagnostics, and we are partnered with Sanford Research, Sanford Health, in the investigation of breast cancer proteins. And Christy Eglund over at Sanford Research has been working on this technology for several years. She's a mm-hmm. breast cancer survivor herself. And she also works for Dr. David Pierce, who kind of heads mm-hmm. up all of Sanford Research. So they've developed a set of, we call them biomarkers. Mm-hmm. So they're proteins that are associated with tumors that a patient's immune system will respond to. And so they've gone through the steps of figuring out what those proteins might be. They actually go manufacture them. And then we put them on our chip. It's a disposable device that we're working on manufacturing. And when we put the patient sample into that chip and the sample washes over the proteins that Sanford has manufactured, if a patient has breast cancer, one of their immune system proteins will stick to that antigen on the chip, and we can see that interaction. It lights up on the chip, and we're currently working through several stages of trying to build up to a couple thousand patients to get a good statistical analysis to be able to see the difference between a patient with breast cancer and a person that doesn't have breast cancer. And as an aside, our technology works on any cancer or immune system condition. But Sanford had we've got 31 markers from Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use the analogy that in this war against cancer that we've patented a machine gun when everybody else is using a rifle. And so what I mean by that is that Sanford has these 31 markers that go on a chip, and to develop those, it took them so many years to develop because they were doing it one at a time. They do an analysis and they look at one thing. We put everything on the chip, and with the advent of microfluidics or nanotechnology, we're able to run a sample over that array and let it incubate and see if we have interactions. And then we run that again and again. We do it between 10 and 20 times over and over instead of just once. So we're firing a lot of bullets at those targets to try and elucidate what's there and what isn't, and try and reduce false positives.
And can you expand this to more protein markers?
Yeah. as I mentioned, that anything that the immune system is reacting to, if we have the right protein on the other side, we can see that reaction. So, for example, type 1 diabetes is an immune system reaction to the cells that make insulin. And there's a number of markers that are out there that we're just beginning to look at. And coincidentally, that kind of falls in line with Sanford's goals as well.
So this is a simple blood test, and this can diagnose first pass cancer.
Yeah, right now we're developing the statistics using Sanford's biobank. So every time a patient has cancer, or at least during the period of the study, they will submit tumor and blood samples to the biobank. Mm-hmm. And those are stored for further testing. And we look at those, and we can tell a lot about a patient. There are multiple types of breast cancer tumors, so we know the type of tumor they have. We know their age. We know whether or not they have other autoimmune issues like lupus that can affect our test. So we have all of that data about the patient, and that goes into our, we're working with some biostatisticians, mm-hmm. they're called, people that look at the numbers and help us to mathematically discriminate, to take our result and say this patient has cancer or doesn't have cancer. And it's never, rarely is it absolute, unless it's a biopsy and you look at it under a microscope. So there'll be numbers associated with that, like that there's an 80 or 90% chance that you have cancer or that you don't have cancer. So,
yeah, 80 to 90%. That's quite a number from a blood test, isn't it?
Yep. We'd love to get to 100. We'll see. But I don't think that's, I'm not saying that that's possible, but that would be our goal. So right now we're focused on the primary tumors and we're working in conjunction with mammography. So a lot of times there's a question about whether something is a tumor or not just from a spot on a mammogram. And we'd like to be able to offer a low-cost blood test. It'll be on the order of $150. That can give the physician an idea of whether or not he's looking at a tumor or just something that is not cancer.
So would you have the blood test in conjunction with the mammogram? Is that...
We would probably, at least initially, do it when there's something suspicious on a mammogram. A mammogram is very quick, and a blood test takes longer. So if we were to try and do both at the same time, we would probably back up the system, so to speak.
So instead of getting that phone call saying there's something suspicious, you need to come back in for another mammogram, instead they'll say, there's something suspicious, I need you to go do a blood test.
Yeah. And
that's the goal.
Yeah, and that's much less invasive than doing a biopsy. A lot less painful and time consuming. Where we really want to save lives, it's a little bit bigger study, is to try and see that metastatic tumor when it's migrated somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, it's really a personalized medicine approach. The patient will have tumor samples, and we'll be able to see how the immune system responded to the primary tumor. And we have seen the markers drop off after surgery, so we know that the immune system no longer has anything to work on. They've gotten the tumor. Then we need to do a clinical trial where we follow those patients for 3 to 5 or even 10 years, which makes it expensive. But follow it for 3 to 5 or 10 years. And this test or the immune system will react to a tumor a lot the same way it would react to the flu virus. So if a flu virus comes back and you've already had it, your immune system immediately goes after it. So we're looking for to see if those same markers show up. The immune system responds to the metastatic tumor the same way it responded to the primary tumor. Some of those markers should come up before the onset of symptoms. Yeah, there is a publication in the literature where they track patients using very expensive scanning technologies, and they found that if they can find the tumor before the onset of symptoms, that they can cut the mortality rate in half. So the real home run here would be to save half the women that die every year of breast cancer.
Wow. And that's just, when you say follow them, that means regular blood work?
Yes. Currently the protocols, and maybe it varies a little bit depending on the type of tumor, but a cancer survivor will see the oncologist every 3 to 6 months initially. And so we're proposing just to take a blood sample on the normal schedule when they go see their oncologist, and so we'll just follow them in the course as they are cancer-free for a longer period of time. Those appointments drop down to probably once a year. But I don't see any reason if $150 blood test buys peace of mind. I think some people will probably
do it every month, maybe.
Or every 3 months. Yeah.
Okay, so we know that all of research takes time. So you are in the stages now of really calibrating your machine, right, and getting your data?
Yeah, we've got, we're working with a first prototype and a second under development. So the first prototype runs 4 samples at a time. It's not very high throughput, but the next generation prototype will have an auto sampler and an 8-channel chip, so we'll be able to run about a sample a minute per instrument, and so much higher throughput. But the data we generate off this prototype gets us through various milestones in the project. We just got a $2.3 million grant from the National Cancer Institute through a program called the Small Business Innovative Research Program. And that's a 3-phase process. So we've got a fast track phase 1, phase 2 grant. So $300,000 for phase 1. We're using our first prototype in phase 1 to look at 400 patients and generate the statistical numbers on 400. And then we'll be moving probably in the first quarter next year to our next prototype and starting to analyze for that goal of about 2,000 patients. And ultimately, there may be tweaks to the instrument at the end of this process, but by the end of 2019, we're looking to be in Sanford's CLIA lab, it's called. It's a lab that, given research data and statistics, they're authorized to run for revenue this test. And the physician will have the benefit of the education of Christy Eglund and her team and ourselves, and the papers we generate, and we can walk them through the logic so that they use the research to make the decision on the diagnosis. It's not something that comes out of the instrument and says, you have cancer, you don't have cancer, like some blood tests would look at the moment. So that gets us to revenues sometime at the end of 2019 or 2020, which is a great thing. And then we start another process with the FDA called a 510K, which is a longer process, but it'll be good to have revenue at that point.
And then it can spread out across the country.
Yeah, and Anavate's actually been around for a few years. Mm-hmm. We were originally spun out of some GlaxoSmithKline technology down in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. And that's centered around the glass slides that we put the proteins on, and it kind of snowballed from there. The researchers down in North Carolina discovered this way of running the instrument over and over and over and the benefit it had on the data. And so the partnership with Sanford has been strong, and it's allowed us to move up here. And we're also working closely with the Governor's Office of Economic Development, which is also at Zeal.
Mm-hmm.
And the SBIR people are out at Zeal. And so there's a real community of entrepreneurial support out there. And you don't find lab space available very often in Sioux Falls. So,
So it lets you work. So Thaddeus, we just have a couple of minutes left before we need to go to break.
Super.
And so we've heard these great businesses, but that's just a drop in the bucket.
It is, yeah. I love these two. These two are complete polar opposites. One's a culture, you know, advisor and superior on human development, or culture development, and one's, yeah, doing lab work and chemistry stuff. I help Rob move the equipment in to his office, and I still don't even know. There's microscopes and there's these things, but they're doing phenomenal things, both these. But yeah, we're so open-ended to everything. We're a 40,000 square foot facility, so we serve those people well that need that dedicated workspace or dedicated lab space. But then we're also open options now with this new remodel with co-working. So that serves people well that are like a remote worker, or they have their own office, but they want that secondary office, or they want that meeting space. We have four individual meeting spaces, and then two additional conference rooms. So serves super well for any kind of industry or background or demographic of whoever it may be. If it's a lab, if it's a service industry person, if it's a product, we bring them all in, and we all kind of unite together in this kind of neutral setting that we are at Zealous Nonprofit for a small business, launching businesses, and early stage businesses.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all very much for taking time out of your day and coming on. Any last parting thoughts?
Well, thank you. And stop by to Zeal and kind of see everything that's going on there. You can learn more about Think3D at letsthink3d.com.
Okay. Rob, any parting words? You're
he's,
good.
He's working in his lab. Yeah.
He's still in his lab mode.
You've got an idea for a business that requires a lab. Let's talk.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for coming on the program today.
Thank you.